It's Alum Group's Andrea Lay, PacFew's Melissa Burdick, live with me here in Connecticut, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Tree, and I'm PBSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 15th, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them hubristically intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with Retail Wit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Melissa, kick us off.
Hey, Fresh Four listeners. Dollar General celebrates opening its 20,000th store. There you go, 20,000. U.S.-based discount retailer Dollar General has opened its 20,000th store, celebrating the occasion in Alice, Texas. The grand opening celebrations were attended by senior leaders and vendors. Dollar General Executive Vice President of Store Operations and Development, Steve Deckard, commented, "We believe each store provides a positive impact in our hometowns through convenient access to affordable essentials, career growth, opportunities for employees, and the ability for local nonprofits, schools, and libraries to advance through Dollar General Literacy Foundation grants." Dollar General also awarded $20,000 to support educational and tutoring programs through donations to a local library and community group, as well as providing new books to a local elementary school. Dollar General employs more than 17,500 Texas employees through its store, distribution center, and private fleet presence in the state. On to you, Sri.
Thank you, Melissa and Peter. Jessica Alba has actually stepped down as Chief Creative Officer of The Honest Company, a company she founded. So after nearly 12 years of the company, Alba shared the news in an Instagram post on Tuesday, April 9th. "It is with grateful heart that 12 years after founding The Honest Company, I'm stepping down from my leadership role as CCO. However, I will continue to provide strategic advice through my role on the board," Alba wrote. What's next, Peter?
Oreo reimagines ubiquitous internet menu icon to dole out discounts. Mondelez international brand Oreo has launched a commerce activation dubbed the Oreo menu that aims to re-envision the internet's ubiquitous three-line hamburger menu navigation tool as a two-stacked Oreo cookies. Key to the effort is a microsite where consumers can enter any tab or category name they see when clicking on the three-bar menu icon on the internet as a promo code to receive a deal for Oreo cookies that can be redeemed at Kroger as part of an exclusive partnership. The activation includes an explanatory video and is being driven by influencer content along with digital and social media to drive engagement. The effort follows Oreo's first Super Bowl ad in a decade earlier this year. Andrea, what do you have to close us out?
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Shein has copyright infringement baked into its business model. Shein is facing a class action lawsuit that alleges that the fast fashion company uses an industrial scale scheme of systematic digital copyright infringement against small designers and artists, according to court documents last week. Attorneys for the group of plaintiffs say that Shein uses sophisticated electronic systems that algorithmically scour the internet for popular works created by artists and misappropriates these works to manufacture and sell them as Shein products without attribution to the creators. The complaint is the latest in a series of copyright infringement lawsuits filed against the fast fashion giant, including an ongoing one from last year that claimed violation of the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act.
Thank you, Andrea. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded.
Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sri and Peter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, a.k.a. the Zone Defense CPG Guy. My domains of expertise revolve around digital shelf content,
retail, customer data, insight, CRM, and loyalty. And my co-host, he's the one-on-one defense CPG guy and an expert at branding, direct-to-consumer, unified commerce, retail media, and marketplaces. Please join me as always in welcoming the man who goes by one name, Sri. Sri, how you doing, my brother?
I want to say awesome, but as you know, Peter, at the time of this recording way back in April, it was the day after opening day. Neither the Dodgers or the Yankees had a great start, but by now, both of us have played caught up. We're leading our division, so life's all good.
Fast forward. We don't need to... Opening day. Don't need to talk about it. Thank you, Sri. It was a little dismal day, but better times ahead for both of our teams. Before we get to our guest today, who I'm very excited, I know Sri is too, to welcome to the podcast, I want to remind our audience that all of our content are podcasts in audio and video format that focuses on things like our series on profitability, our women's leadership series, and our founders from the first quarter of this year. It's all available at cpgguys.com. And Sri, what do we charge them for that? Like, it's nothing, right? It's free. Zero. Big, big donut. So it's all free. You have no excuse not to go get it. And also, we humbly request that you also follow us on our LinkedIn page if you're not doing so already. It's where we publish all of our content and make all of our announcements. Just go to LinkedIn and just enter the CPG guys or CPG guys in the search box. You'll find the page and just click the follow button and everything will start to appear in your feed. You'll be very happy because we do talk a lot and I think you'll find it very interesting. Some of it is fun, some of it is informative, but please do join us. All right, on to the main event. Our guest today is known as, Sri, ready? The content guy. I love that. That fits right into our mantra. This is good. He's the force behind Morning Newsbeat, a contextual retail news service, which he describes as analysis with attitude. Yes. So more than 30,000 CPG and retail industry insiders are well familiar with this news and insights service and what he purveys on his site and through email updates delivered directly to their inboxes. He's a highly regarded speaker and the author of several books. He authored Retail Rules, 52 Ways to Achieve Retail Success. And he co-authored The Big Picture. When he's not at home in his state where I reside in Connecticut, and he's just a little bit down the coast from me, he's an adjunct faculty member at Portland State University's Center for Retail Leadership. Please join us in welcoming to the CPG Guys podcast, the legendary Kevin Koop. Kevin, it is a distinct pleasure to meet you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Peter, although you did not tell me when you invited me that I was going to be stuck on a podcast with a Yankee fan and a Dodger fan. Oh. I have no problem with that, but there are two guys who are whining about a dismal opening day because you lost one out of 162 games. I'm a Mets fan. And give me a break.
Well, I understand that you're upset that the Mets are already mathematically eliminated from the play. but that's okay.
No, not this year. We got Lindor. Are you kidding? I'm feeling pretty good.
All right. There we go. That sounds good. Hey, before we get to the questions we have for you, can you, our audience loves to multitask and learn about our guests while they're listening to this podcast. I know you've got both Morning Newsbeat and you've got your personal site. Can you tell our audience, and we'll put links to this in the liner notes of the podcast, but can you tell the listening audience where to find you online? And then after that, would love to get a better flavor of the type of content you're trying to provide it at your site and the kind of POV you put out.
I'm the easiest guy in the world to find. Morning Newsbeat is exactly like it sounds. MorningNewsBeat.com. There you'll find whatever I published probably today as you listen or watch this. And you'll find I've been doing this I'm in my 20th year. So you'll find a lot in the archives as well. And then my personal site is Kevin Koop, KevinCoupe.com. And there you can find out more about the books, speaking, and some of the other things that I do.
We will thank you for that, Kevin. We'll also put links to your books on Amazon in the podcast liner notes as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Great. Hey, listen, so Sri and I love nothing better than an episode of Rank Punditry. We really love bouncing the ideas around, kicking the can, asking questions, turning over stones. So we hope you're game for doing that with us today.
It's sort of what I've been doing. I mean,
I figure, you
know, five days a week, 46, 48 weeks a year for
this is going to come naturally to you. So this is great. All right. Many people are focused on what appears to be the end in sight for the pandemic. I know I've just got my first shot and I'm scheduled to get my next one in a couple of weeks. But should retailers and brands be focused on the immediate future and all the wonderful year-over-year performance issues that they're dealing with versus turbulent 2020? Or should they be looking beyond 2021 for focus? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think you have to look at both. I mean, if you're a public company, there are going to be some issues that are going to come up, right? Because in 21, there's no way you're going to have the same comps you had in 20. You know, if your sales were up 18% in 20 compared to 19, let's say in the second or third quarter, you know, they might be up 2% in 21, or they might be down 1%, but still be significantly over what they were in 19. You know, public companies are going to run into issues simply because some analyst on Wall Street is going to go, oh man, look at the, you know, the sky is falling. Let's invest in GameStop instead of Kroger, you know, something like that.
We got to get our Robinhood apps up and running again. We forgot about that. Sorry about that, Kevin.
That's all right. So, I mean, I think, so there's that issue. But it seems to me that, yeah, I mean, hopefully we're headed towards the end of the pandemic. I'm a little bit more reserved in my predictions about that than some. You know, as we record this, the CDC has just come out and said you can travel. And as long as you know, if you've had both vaccinations, and I have, I'm 2 weeks past my second vaccination, so I'm feeling pretty good right now. You know, so they've said, listen, if you wear a mask and you socially distance and you wash your hands a lot and you've had your two vaccines, you're in good shape to travel. You know, it ends up my first trip is going to probably be to Texas, which I don't know. I don't know how I'm feeling about that one simply because, you know, they have no mandates down there. But and I worry that, you know, we've seen enough in terms of surges and resurgences that I worry that, you know, I do think there's a concern about spiking the ball on the 5-yard line. That said, I mean, I think we can begin to say we're going to get, you know, it's become a cliche, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is not necessarily an oncoming train at this point. So I do think it's critical to sort of look at 2022. You know, if certainly 2020 was a nightmare of a year. I mean, in some ways, a great year. I mean, financially for so many retailers, because, you know, all they had to do is bring product in the back door and they could open the front doors and everything would sell. So, but it was still a nightmare year in terms of operations, lots of issues. You know, 21, I think, is a transitional year. 22, it has got to be for the retailers that really want to make a difference. I think 22 has got to be, you know, a transformative year for them, that they've got to. Let's put it this way. Back when this thing started in March and April of 20, you know, I was writing a lot about how I felt retailers had to develop what Jeff Bezos would call two pizza teams, right? So, you know, it couldn't be so big that you couldn't feed it with two pizzas, and figure out how their companies would be fundamentally different coming out of the pandemic than they were going in. That they would be charged with figuring out the broader implications of the things that were happening in terms of consumer behavior, in terms of technology, in terms of how they were operating, and figure out how to be different. And I remain sort of steadfast in that belief that retailers have to figure out how are we going to be different in 22 than we were in 20. And if there are not some fundamental differences in how they come to market, in how they communicate with shoppers, and in how they deliver on the value proposition, then they've lost an opportunity. You know, retail, there was a lot of use of the word essential a year ago. You don't hear that word so much anymore. But I think that what retailers, and by the way, and CPG brands need to do this exactly the same thing. You know, they need to think about what is it about their value proposition and their product and the, or the services that they offer that actually is essential, and then really work that going forward. That if they don't do those things, they run the risk in 22 of being marginalized by retailers that have done it and are businesses that have done it. And that includes resurgent businesses like restaurants. I mean, restaurants have obviously, right, more than half of all food was consumed for out of the home a year and a half ago, and that's changed dramatically. But anybody who thinks that restaurants are just going to go away, I think is mistaken. I think they're going to reinvent themselves and, in fact, may become more competitive with supermarkets and their sale of CPG brands than they were before.
A while ago, Peter and I listened in to the Kroger presentation, aka Investor Day. We both felt pretty strongly that Kroger pretty much told the world they are entering into the world of retail media in a significant way and definitely wanted to be one of the leaders in that space. Would love to get your viewpoint on the presence and role of retail media this last year, especially. Not just Kroger, but Walmart.com, et cetera. And do you think Kroger will actually be the leader in this space?
You know, it's hard. The leader in this space? I don't know. I mean, Walmart has clearly decided that they're going to make a major commitment to retail media. You know, they've come out and said, we want to be the top 10 advertising agency in this country, purely on the basis of selling our own media on our own platforms. And certainly they've got the bandwidth to be able to do that. Is Kroger going to be in that kind of rarefied air? I don't know. And Amazon certainly is in the business where they're making a ton of money, selling advertising that has nothing to do with the margin they're actually making on the product. And I think we're going to see other companies do the sort of same thing. I mean, all of a sudden, as retailers are trying to maximize, you know, their presence, not just physical presence, but digital presence, it's going to make sense for, you know, many of them to figure out how do they monetize that in a way that supports their operations and allows them to keep their margins tight and still make money. And some of this is not new. I mean, MyWeb Grocer, which was an early player in the e-commerce business, I mean, they were doing that for their retail clients, I don't know, 20 years ago, 18 years ago. It just simply makes a lot of sense. You know, I don't know that I would spend necessarily a lot of time figuring out who's going to be number one and who's going to be number eight. But I do think there's going to be a lot of competition for that. And that, you know, and that's simply... And in some ways, that's going to become the current equivalent of slotting allowances and failure fees and things like that. It's another way for retailers to make money from their suppliers that has nothing necessarily to do with the products that they're selling or the degree to which customers like or love those products. I'm not original in this thought. There was a really, really smart guy named Glenn Terbeek, yep, who used to work for Anderson Consulting long before it was Accenture. And in fact, Glenn wrote a book, I have it here, called Agentry Agenda. And he wrote it, Selling Food in a Frictionless Marketplace. Yep. And in addition to being, I mean, I'm a disciple at Glenn's knee, as is another one of your guests, Tom Furphy. And, you know, Glenn's position was, and when he wrote this book probably 30 years ago, was that retailers were spending way too much time being sales agents for the manufacturer as opposed to being buying agents for the consumer. And that things like slotting allowances and failure fees were just an outgrowth of that. And if you looked at and I can't do the math in my head, but it basically said, if you look at all the total profit in the supermarket industry, for all major companies, it was roughly the same number as the promotional spend of all the major manufacturers. In other words, retailers weren't making any money on the buy; they were making money any money on the sell. They were making money on the buy.
Yep.
And that made no sense to him because it corrupted small c, what should be their main role, which is to provide customers with products that are relevant to their lives and resonant to their lives, and that make them happy and that they love. And that if you're only carrying a product because there's a really good slotting allowance attached to it, it sort of diminishes your relevance to the customer. Retail media, it seems to me, runs the risk of being that as well. That suddenly you're taking ads for products that may be irrelevant to your customers because you've gone to manufacturer X and said, not only if you want to be on our shelves, and you want this kind of placement, you're going to have to spend this much money on a slotting allowance. And by the way, you're going to have to support it with advertising, which, by the way, they were doing in circulars and ads, and which a lot of stuff of which has gone away because of the internet, right? No, people are not putting out circulars the way they were. So, I'm not sure that anybody's necessarily reinventing the wheel. In terms of that, I'm not sure. Again, I think everybody's going to try it to varying degrees. The big companies will be able to do it on their own. Smaller and regional chains will be able to probably do it through their wholesaler, or there'll be advertising agencies or agencies that'll come along and sort of enable it. I think everybody's going to be in the game. There are some permutations of that which get sort of more interesting and more differentiated. And we can talk about this later if you want, but things like T-commerce,
yeah,
where there's a different kind of relationship. But again, a long answer to a short question.
We're not in Iowa, but as we record this episode, it's opening week for Major League Baseball. In fact, as we were sitting here, some news came across the wire that MLB is moving the All-Star game away from Atlanta. While I don't want to go down the road of politics, I prefer to focus on the positive. This is a magical time for baseball fans like Shree and me. I ritualistically rewatch my favorite movies like Bull Durham and The Natural for Love of the Game. And of course, The Field of Dreams. I've actually been there in Iowa. It's one of my favorites. So I'm sorry to go a little off topic, but in my mind, this is kind of a giant metaphor for renewal. I'd love your thoughts just in general about how renewal applies to the industry we're following. We've gone through a really turbulent year with a whole lot of big changes and disruption in how consumers acted, how manufacturers and retailers supplied. Would love to know your thoughts on renewal going forward.
Listen, any business that is not in the constant, is not in a constant state of renewal, especially today, is probably has an expiration date on it. And I think that, I do think in a lot of ways, baseball is an interesting, baseball is the great metaphor for everything. The great novelist Robert B. Parker once said that baseball is the most important thing that doesn't matter. And I think that it's interesting. We're going to go down the baseball rabbit hole for a second. It is interesting that baseball has, if you look at some of the things that baseball has done over the years in terms of renewing itself, certainly coming off what was a very tough year for any major league sport. But if you even go back farther, if you look at the way baseball realized that the experience of going to the ballpark, had to be something more. And some of this they got, some of this they learned from the minor leagues. I think the minor leagues, you talk about Bull Durham,
yep,
right? I mean, the minor leagues were always a great example of really smart marketing and smart retailing in its own way. Because in major league sports, you sell the team, right? If you're selling, I'm a Mets fan, passionate Mets fan. So we're selling DeGrom, we're selling Lindor, I mean, we're selling those things because that's the foundation. Minor league teams could never do that because minor league teams could, you know, whoever you marketed today, if he was any good, he was going to be gone tomorrow. So yeah. They had to sell an experience and they had to excel the fact that coming to the ballpark was going to be fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some of it worked and some of it didn't. I mean, you live along the coast of Connecticut, like I do. You were within a stone's throw or a baseball's throw of both the New Haven Ravens and the Bridgeport Bluefish.
Oh, yes.
Not, you know, and those were great experiences. Unfortunately, you know, part of independent leagues or at least the Bluefish were in an independent league, which I, you know, they had their own problems.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if you watch how a really great minor league teams were able to sort of renew the experience, it is a great metaphor for how retail, especially, and also, you know, products have to continue to, you know, reinvent themselves and find reasons to have people either buy them or come into the store or whatever it happens to be. You know, it's funny. You talk about baseball movies. I just flipped on the other night and it was that great scene in Bull Durham where Tim Robbins' character, Nuke LaLoosh, keeps, you know, and it keeps shaking off Crash Davis. I want to bring the heat. I want to bring the heat. And he comes out and I want to bring the heat, but he hits first pitch fastballs. I don't care. He hasn't hit mine. And he said, fine. And then he goes, tell the guy first pitch right there. It's going to be a fastball. Guy hits it, you know, over the wall. And it's like very rarely in life do businesses get that opportunity where somebody's going to tell you what's coming.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, very often you're sitting there and you don't know if somebody's going to throw you a fastball, a curve, or a splitter, then you don't necessarily have a lot of time to react. And businesses need to construct themselves so that they are faster at reacting. And by the way, that is exactly in a lot of ways. And if I'm rambling here, stop me. Okay. No, because I could do that.
Keep sometimes. Going. We love this.
Digression is my middle name.
Yeah.
When you think about it, that's exactly what happened during the pandemic. That retailers were more nimble and more innovative than ever before. And from the big ones to the small ones. And the reason was they had to be. Because like on March 1st, everything changed. Or thereabouts, right? And so they had to suddenly do things they'd never done before. If they weren't in e-commerce, they had to suddenly get into e-commerce. If they weren't doing click and collect, they had to get into click and collect or delivery, what happened to be. And they had to do these things all really quickly. They had to put up plexiglass overnight. They had to, all these things they had to do. And the reason they were so good at doing it was because they didn't have time to think about it. They didn't think of it as innovation. They thought of it as survival. But in fact, they were innovating. And in the same way that a baseball player has to decide like that, as soon as the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, what is this going to be? Can I hit it? Should I swing? And that is a great lesson going forward.
Yeah.
That you can't overanalyze innovation. I quote Bezos a lot. Bezos' great line is, you know, it's not an experiment if you know if it's going to turn out. And so many businesses say to themselves, okay, well, we're going to take 6 months. We're going to put together, you know, a team of people to examine it. Then we're going to do focus groups. And by the time they've made the decision to do it, because they're sure it's going to work, well, it's already past its expiration date and it's time they should be doing something else. And I think that retailers should have learned from the pandemic that sometimes you have to turn on the pitch really quickly, see what happens, and then be able to say, okay, and now I got to go on to the next thing. And that was that was my short rant.
I'm going to go take us back to Amazon. Pandemic happened. We heard of 11, at the time this was recorded, 11 fresh Amazon stores had already expanded into the national marketplace here in the US. Peter and I feel, though, during the pandemic, Walmart, we talked about Instacart in another question, really beefed up their muscles in terms of their household penetration with e-commerce in a significant way. But Amazon, you know, they were already well penetrated. really didn't make significant dents in our humble learning. And we had spoken with a friend of yours, Tom Furphy, a little while ago. And he was of the opinion that Amazon is now, the attention is all on the fresh brick and mortar stores. What are your thoughts on these fresh brick and mortar stores for Amazon? And do you think this is the future of grocery for Amazon? But then what happens to the acquisition of Whole Foods?
Well, first of all, I one of my rules is I never disagree with Tom Furphy. So that's number one. I think that the, I think he's clearly that Amazon is putting a lot of emphasis. I mean, what they've got 11, they're going to have, I mean, the word is they're going to have 28. I mean, they could have 100 pretty quickly because there's a lot of retail real estate out there that is available. They're clearly putting more emphasis on that than they say on the Amazon Go stores or the 4-star stores. And it is said that this still remains a passion for Jeff Bezos. That as he steps away from being CEO, one of the things he would continue to like to continue focusing on is the growth of grocery. You know, I do think that I do think it's likely that we're going to see continued evolution of that format. You know, with more focus on fresh. Then people using, you know, people buying their CPG products online, using that as a pickup point, and then being able to go into that store and pay more attention to fresh with a more limited selection of packaged goods in those stores. So I would suspect we'll see, you know, and they're going to be more competitive with traditional grocery stores than Whole Foods is. You know, I don't know that they will. I don't think it means anything necessarily negative for Whole Foods. I think they'll continue to learn from how Whole Foods does fresh. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that say that, you know, Whole Foods has lost a couple of steps since Amazon took it over. I always go to great pains to remind people that, you know, Whole Foods was in trouble before Amazon took it over. I mean, they were having problems. I mean, there wasn't, you know, they didn't wake up one morning and say, oh, wouldn't it be fun to be owned by Amazon? They weren't in danger of folding or anything like that, but that was a rescue operation in some ways, no matter what John Mackey would have us believe. So I think that, you know, I think they'll continue to learn from Whole Foods. I think they'll open new Whole Foods stores where it makes sense, you know, and they'll open new Amazon Fresh stores where it makes sense. And maybe we'll see some combination thereof. I mean, I think that, you know, I think the thing about we know about Amazon is they're willing to experiment. And so will you see a retail location that has an Amazon Fresh store to appeal to one customer and then a Whole Foods store maybe to appeal to a different customer at a different level and maybe some version of an Amazon Go store that will serve as a convenience store that will appeal to a different customer. And they can all operate potentially in the same universe without necessarily cannibalizing each other. I always hesitate to predict what Amazon's going to do, simply because what they're probably going to do is something that none of us are thinking about at the moment. And so, I think Amazon Fresh is clearly has got greater potential for legs than other stores. Amazon Go is sort of a store it's got to be a place you can walk to, right? There's a lot more places in America that you would drive to. Amazon Fresh is that. So there, that becomes more important. You know, then the question becomes in a marketplace where you see dollar stores opening at an enormously fast rate, as well as limited assortment stores. I mean, if Amazon wants to play in that territory with a more sophisticated e-commerce component than either of those two segments have, I think that could be an interesting play. Plus, they can put drone landing pads on their roofs, and whatever it is, it's not going to be just one thing. It will be some combination thereof.
Great. I want to remind our audience that all of our content is available at cpgguys.com. And we'd love your feedback. If you go to ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys and write a review, we can invite on people like Kevin and talk about topics like we talked about today that interest you. In the liner notes of today's episode, we'll have links to Morning Newsbeat, to kevincoop.com, and to his books on probably Amazon is where the best place we should drive them. But on behalf of Sri and me, Kevin, I want to thank you for joining us on this wide-ranging and rank punditry episode. We love doing this. So thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right, Sri, I had a great time today. How about you?
Awesome. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us and helping us with the Rank 23, a word that we both often tend to love.
All right. To our audience, I want to say thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you on the next episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Goodbye. The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.